TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Sweet Liberty, are we living in a police state yet? This is part one of a one-hour program on the loss of liberty and the emerging police state since September 11th. And I'll begin with a quote from Milton Meyer about Nazi Germany. This is what he says about the Hitler regime. The taking away of freedom took place slowly, each step disguised. One no more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing. One day it is over his head. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. Suddenly it all comes down all at once. You see what you are, what you have done, or, more accurately, what you haven't done. For that was all that was required of most of us, that we do nothing. You remember everything now, and your heart breaks. Too late. You are compromised beyond repair. This is an account of the arrival of fascism in Germany in the 1930s by Milton Meyer, an American journalist of German Jewish descent. This program raises the question, are we living in a police state yet? Nancy Hormace is a Texas-born immigration lawyer and longtime National Lawyers Guild member. She practices immigration and asylum law in Berkeley, California. Here is her list of freedoms lost since September 11th. Her first quotes refer to immigrants and residents from the Middle East. She ends with a list of executive orders, allowing the government to take over the communications media and to force us into work brigades. Nancy Hormace.
On the 18th of September, INS announced regulations extending the period of permissible detention for non-citizens without charges or hearing. After unilaterally extending the period of detention for non-citizens, late in September or in early October, attorneys for INS and prosecutors began relying on a secret FBI memo to justify detaining indefinitely individuals being arrested in the nationwide dragnets in the aftermath of 9/11. On October 12th, Justice Department issued new regulations limiting access to information under the Freedom of Information Act, even where the information has no involvement with law enforcement or national security. On October the 25th, President Bush signed the U.S. Patriot Act, providing law enforcement and intelligence agencies unprecedented powers of detention, search, and seizure. October the 26th, the Department of Injustice announced a regulation allowing the INS to override the giving of bail by an immigration judge. In early November, the Department of Injustice announced new guidelines as to when an FBI investigation can be initiated. Under the changes, FBI agents and informers may be sent into churches and mosques to engage in totally political investigations that are not based on any criminal predicate. In addition, the Injustice Department issued regulations authorizing government monitoring of attorney-client communications. On November 9th, the Department of State announced it would slow the processing of visa applications for men between the ages of 16 and 45 from 26 Arab and/or Muslim nations. These visa applicants would be subjected to special security checks taking at least 20 days and would be required to complete a detailed questionnaire on their backgrounds. November the 13th, the Department of Justice announced that it intended to interview 5,000 men who entered the United States from Middle Eastern and other countries after January of the year 2000. That net number was later revised to 8,000 or more. In April of this year, the Department of Justice announced that the names of Muslim, Arab, and South Asian deportation absconders will be tracked down by entering their names in the FBI National Crime Computer System. These people are not criminals. Very few of them have criminal convictions. These are people who've overstayed their visas and have absolutely no connection to 9/11. In April and May, the Senate and House, respectively, and unanimously passed the Enhanced Border Security and Visa Entry Reform Act, prohibiting admission of non-immigrants from Cuba, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Sudan, and North Korea. As if these unprecedented infringements on civil liberties were not sufficiently offensive, on June 1st, Senator Dianne Feinstein commented that to prevent terrorism, one isn't going to look for blonde Norwegians, and justified the repressive tactic, saying that the racial profiling debate has had a chilling effect on the FBI. Yes. On the 5th of June, General Ashcroft announced that 100,000 or more foreign visitors a year to the land of the free will be fingerprinted, photographed, interrogated, and required to register with the government. Incoming foreign nationals will be required to report to immigration authorities within 30 days of their arrival. Also on the 5th of June, the House approved a bill titled the Customs Border Security Act. I don't know where they get all of these various names. They must work on this a long time. But anyway, this particular act allows incoming or outgoing mail to be searched at the border without a search warrant. Also in June of this year, Bush proposed the creation of the Department of Homeland Security with its 170,000 employees and budget of $37.5 million, which would merge workers from several already existing government agencies, such as Secret Service, INS, Customs, Coast Guard, and others with very famous reputations. If these examples of infringements on our civil and human rights are not enough to bring to mind a police state, I want to share with you a few of the more interesting executive orders which Bush has recently declared and which are not subject to congressional review. And like they do in all of the Department of State cables that are sent around, I want to emphasize not subject to congressional review. These executive orders grant FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and presumably any new national security police draconian police state powers in an emergency. For example, Executive Order 10990 allows the government to take over all modes of transportation and control of highways and seaports. 10995 allows the government to seize and control the communication media. 10997 allows the government to take over all electric power, gas, petroleum, fuels, and minerals. 10998 allows the government to take over all food and food resources and farms. 11,000 allows the government to mobilize civilians into work brigades under government supervision. Are you ready? 11,001 allows the government to take over all health, education, and welfare functions. 1102 designates the Postmaster General to operate a national registration of all persons. Executive Order 11003 allows the government to take over all airports and aircraft, including commercial aircraft. Sadly, in my opinion, we find ourselves living in the Mecca of modernity, surrounded by quite self-absorbed individuals, where racial profiling is in vogue and justified by neoliberal pundits. But I want to end on a positive point. We are all, to some degree or another, victims of the global war on terrorism. As Professor Chomsky suggests, victims should certainly resist the predictable exploitation of the crisis, and we should focus our own efforts no less relentlessly on the primary issues that remain much as they were before, among them increasing militarism, destruction of the environment, and a far-reaching assault on freedom and democracy. Thank you.
That was Nancy Hornche, immigration lawyer and longtime National Lawyers Guild member. Next up is Mark Vanderhout. He practices law in San Francisco, California. His best known and ongoing case is the LA 8 case. Seven Palestinians and a Kenyan woman were arrested by the FBI in 1987 on the grounds that they were members or supporters of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Lower courts confirmed that immigrants enjoy a constitutional right to free speech. However, the Supreme Court denied them First Amendment protection and said, quote, "The executive should not have to disclose its real reasons for deeming nationals of a particular country a special threat." The government's arguments in the LA 8 case, as you will hear in a moment, are a blueprint for the Patriot Act. Here's Mark Vanderhout.
The Justice Department, or as Nancy said, the Injustice Department, has used September 11th to implement a plan that it has had in the developing stages for many, many years. You know that the Patriot Act, which was passed almost unanimously so quickly after September 11th, wasn't drafted since September 11th. It's been in formation for almost 20 years. Shortly after the LA 8 case began in 1986, we were leaked a copy of a document that was called the Contingency Plan for Alien Terrorists and Other Undesirables. And that document, which the government quickly disowned as a work of some FBI underling that didn't get very far in the Justice Department, was a blueprint for what the government tried to do and actually has been trying to do for 15 years in the LA 8 case. And many of the elements were exactly, word for word, what ended up in the Patriot Act. So this has been a plan that has been put forward by government officials, by Justice Department officials, by career individuals that have been working against political movements in this country for the past 20 years. They used September 11th to finally get what they couldn't get politically previously and what they couldn't get in the courts. The military tribunals, which were announced with great fanfare and were really, you know, almost floated as a trial balloon in the press to see what the reaction would be. And actually, there was a lot of outrage about the military tribunals, thankfully. Because even though the American public is willing to accept certain curbs on liberties, I think there is a fundamental abhorrence with the concept that people can be kept in detention for months on end, not being allowed to see a lawyer, and not knowing what the charges are against them. When it was initially floated, the language that was floated did not preclude the military tribunals from being used against United States citizens. So quickly, Bush made a pronouncement. It won't be used against United States citizens. So what happened? Jose Padilla gets arrested. Lo and behold, he's a United States citizen. what are they going to do? They declare Jose Padilla an enemy combatant who has no recourse to the United States judicial system, even though he is a United States citizen. They declare him an enemy combatant who cannot, even as a United States citizen, cannot see a lawyer, cannot have a hearing. And the government's position on this, and it's truly outrageous, is that if the executive branch declares you or you or you a supporter of terrorism, they can take away all your rights. And they can say, we're not going to prosecute you criminally. We're going to keep you in detention until what? Until when? Until the war on terrorism is over. And what's the war? It's this undeclared war on terrorism, which has no end. Another individual, Yasser Asim Hamdi, U.S. citizen born in Louisiana, raised in Saudi Arabia, was picked up in Afghanistan in September and brought here. Again, because he's a U.S. citizen, Bush has promised not to use a military tribunal. So what have they done? Enemy combatant. A federal public defender in Virginia tried to go to court on his behalf and said, I have a right to see him. I have a right to talk to him. He has a right to see me, to talk to me. He has a right to due process, fundamental to our concept in this country. District court, U.S. District Court, which is the lowest court, agreed with the federal public defender. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the level below the Supreme Court, overturned that decision and said that lawyer has no standing, no right to go into court and bring a lawsuit on behalf of this individual because that individual doesn't have a lawyer because we don't let that individual have a lawyer. That's what the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, one of the 12 appellate districts in this country, just below the Supreme Court, has said. The government is detaining individuals and holding them as material witnesses, not charging with any crimes, but holding them for months and months and months on end. People have been held since September 11th as quote-unquote material witnesses to potential prosecutions in this war on terrorism. They're being held without access to any court process because the government asserts, while they might have some information to give, not in a case against themselves, not being charged with anything, but in some other case that we want to prosecute. And so they're being held without bail, without access to court process, indefinitely. A U.S. District Court in New York, in an individual case recently, held that unconstitutional. That is up on appeal now, and we don't know where that will go. But given this Supreme Court, we can't be very optimistic about where they're going to end up on some of these issues, at least. Material support of terrorist organizations. Let me touch on that because many of you might be very vulnerable. Unfortunately, I think a lot of activists in this country are not really aware of the laws that have been in the book since 1996, since the Anti-Terrorism Act was passed, which makes it illegal to provide material support, quote unquote, to a terrorist organization. The LA-8 have been facing deportation on that for 15 years in the immigration context, and we've challenged those provisions. We were able to get a ruling that providing lawful support, money for newspapers, hospitals, etc., was First Amendment protected activity. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal held that. But in a more recent case, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is here in California, in a case called Humanitarian Law Project, a group of individuals sued on challenging the criminal provisions, said that the government, in the criminal context at least, could prosecute U.S. citizens, and it was constitutional to prevent them from providing material support to terrorist organizations, quote unquote, lawful support by any means, hospitals, daycare centers. What does that mean? It means that you have to know when you're contributing money, who you're contributing money to, and whether the government has decided to name that organization as a terrorist organization. They have unfettered discretion to name these organizations as terrorist organizations, and they've been doing it with increased frequency since September 11th. How many of you have bothered to look on the State Department's website to check out whether organizations giving money to are designated terrorist organizations? You better do it. You better do it. The website is www.state.gov. You got to go on there. They are adding organizations, charitable organizations, mostly right now Muslim, Arab organizations. But we are all vulnerable. If you get prosecuted for material support to a terrorist organization, the statute says that you cannot challenge in that defense, in your defense, whether or not the organization is terrorist. Only the organization itself can say we're not terrorists, and they, if they want to open their books to the United States government, etc. One positive note I want to mention, one district court recently, in a case in Los Angeles, did hold that provision unconstitutional, so maybe there's some hope for that, but I'm not optimistic, quite honestly, about what the Supreme Court will do with that. So you really need to know these laws, you need to know what organization has been designated. The definition of a terrorist organization is so broad that it includes any organization that in any way has supported terrorist activity. Terrorist activity, in turn, is so broad that it is defined as the use of a gun or the threat to use a gun to endanger property. Think of that for a minute. There are now U.S. citizens who are vulnerable to being prosecuted and put in jail for years on end. Once they designate the organization, say it's in supporting activity, and that activity is any organization that uses a gun to endanger property. That is every single liberation organization in the world. So you've got to be careful. I'm not saying we stop supporting them. I think we do support them, but you've got to be aware of the vulnerability if they start prosecuting. So far, U.S. citizens still have the right to challenge, on selective prosecution grounds, these prosecutions. That was taken away from Khadr Hamidi, Michelle Shahada, and the other members of the LA-8 in an appalling Supreme Court decision 2 years ago in the LA-8 case, where the government said immigrants do not have the right to go to court to challenge on selective prosecution grounds that they've been targeted solely for their First Amendment protected activity and they've been picked out because they're Palestinian or because they're Arab or because they're Jewish, although we haven't seen any of those prosecutions yet. The government's use of these provisions is frightening, and its selective use is extremely frightening. Recently, the government has decided to prosecute Arab nationals. They haven't said it's Arab nationals, but it is Arab nationals, for failure to report a change of address if they're immigrants. Immigrants have a law that's been on the books for 50 years. I don't think it's ever been used before. Saying you got to, every time you move your home, you got to report a change of address within 10 days. The last few months, there have been prosecutions. People have gone to jail for failing to do that, and then they're facing deportation from the United States, permanent banishment, even if they're lawful permanent residents, for failure to do that. If you are not a U.S. citizen, you better start making sure you submit your change of address forms every time you move your home. We've seen this type of activity, I don't know if on this scale before, where cries of national security have led to the trampling of citizens' and non-citizens' rights, where people have been intimidated from opposing government policies, silenced and labeled traitors if they speak out. From the Palmer raids to the shameful internment of the Japanese in World War II, to the deportation, prosecution, jailing, and blacklisting of alleged communists in the McCarthy era, the constitutional civil rights of people who have spoken out or who are targeted have been violated. And many times, courts in those eras, in the name of national security, have upheld those actions of the government. Only years later, when it's politically acceptable to say the internment of Japanese was appalling, the blacklisting of communists was appalling, are those cases repudiated. But when the cries of national security sound loud, the Supreme Court often gets silenced. We have a duty. We all have a duty. We have to speak out. We have to speak out loudly. We've got to use the courts, those of us who can. We've got to use the press, those of us who can. And we've got to use the streets, those of us who can.
That was Mark Vanderhout. He practices law in San Francisco, California, and is lead attorney in the ongoing LA 8 case. This was part one of a one-hour program on the question, are we living in a police state yet? Next week, you will hear from attorney Lynn Stewart, accused of aiding terrorists. She's facing 40 years in prison. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on the topic of a police state on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the full one-hour program with Mark Vanderhout, Nancy Hormache, and Lynn Stewart for $12. That includes shipping. A transcript is available for $10. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.